Tonight on Big Head Mode, we're talking at PAX Australia. We have, I was going to say just returned, but it's been almost a week now, guys. Carlo, Tom, you're in here with me. We had a crazy weekend.
It was indeed a weekend of PAX.
It's no argument from me. We're also going to talk about the Witcher movie that they just announced today, which is pretty big.
Do I have some things to say about that?
I think we're all going to have a lot to say. I kind of think I know what you're going to say, Carlos, so getting ready for that. And I'm going to review Assassin's Creed Syndicate, which is definitely a game. You are on Big Head Mode. This is 2RRR's weekly gaming show. I'm Ben O'Brien.
I'm Carlo Ritchie.
I'm Tom McClurkin.
That was good. You're cutting into my work. It's less for me to say now.
And if you're listening on the podcast, everything just add a week. Add a week to any times that we say.
That's and we're going to give some mighty specific times.
Yeah. Or pretend that you're in the past.
Although saying add a week, like, that's just as irrelevant. I mean, time is an infinite thing, Carlo.
Yeah.
This could be, someone could be sifting through the wasteland of society, civilization, and then find a podcast.
Yeah, that's true. Add about
just
6 weeks then.
The
very good. So look, at this time last week, guys, in fact, this time last week, we were all sitting in the main theatre at the Melbourne Convention and Exhibition Centre in a giant theatre.
It was
2,500 seats, ready to do bonus stage on stage at PAX.
Yeah. We were just going live now. We were in the beginning of the show.
Let's just bask in that glory for a minute.
Let's all just remember what it was like, what glory was like. Mm.
And it was a pretty cool. It was a pretty cool show. It was a pretty cool show.
Yeah,
we had some awesome guests.
There is video of that show that I'm sort of procuring, and we're going to be able to. I think we're going to cut it into segments, put it online that way.
Pop,
and then you know, after all that, if there's interest, we can put the whole thing up. But it is like, it's an hour and a half show, and I don't have faith that a huge number of people are going to sit through an hour and a half YouTube video.
I sat through it the first time, and it was hard enough.
Try sitting up on stage. I have to look at people like you in the audience, Tom.
Oh, man.
That said, though, if you are a podcast listener and you did watch us online, we had a lot of people watching on Twitch.
Yeah.
Thanks so much. That's really awesome of you.
Yeah, it was streamed live on the PAX Twitter, Twitch feed. Twitch. I'm down with Duolingo. 1,500 viewers for that, which was great. And the feed went away before I got a chance to read any of the comments. So, all-round victory.
Wonderful.
Boom, boom.
But we did some crazy stuff. I mean, there's some stuff that just went wonderfully. Live Gwent, I think I want to have a rethink. Because there are a lot of people in the audience didn't know the rules of Gwent.
Yeah. Who'd have thought? Isn't everybody just all over Gwent?
No.
Yeah.
Is that a highlight for you, do you think, Colin, having played Gwent? The better part of the last 6 months has been occupied by Gwent for you. Do you think that's the best way to end your Gwent?
And I won by 1 point.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can play Gwent again. Although the DLC
How can you ever top playing Gwent on stage?
Playing Gwent with a Northern Realms deck on stage.
Ooh.
Then you get to see me come to life. I make those cards dance.
Oh, dear. So it was a crazy weekend all around. I mean, obviously, we were very occupied across our panels. One of the other panels were on Geek Bomb versus Big Head Mode for trivia. That is on YouTube. We posted it on the Facebook page. You can have a look at that.
Whoa. I can watch it online.
You sure can. Thus is the majesty of modern technology.
Pa-ching.
Technology.
Yeah.
The noise of technology.
Tom's brought in a soundboard.
Metal clanging on metal. It was a crazy weekend, though. I mean, I'm not sure. I've heard different numbers in terms of how many people were there. I've heard 45,000. I heard 70,000 over the whole weekend. They opened up more parts of the exhibition centre than they did last year.
And there's talk that next year might be even bigger, that it might be the whole centre.
Wow.
And then the year after, it's going to be all of Melbourne.
And just and then 10 years
just people will be opening up their homes and
then
and, you come
and then
inside
the year after games. It's not even that weekend, it's just all year round.
Yeah.
And they're just never gonna leave.
Yeah. It would be great if you could live PAX all year round. Like, not in that you're always at a convention, but if you there was always something that you could watch about video games, or always like a podcast you could listen to every Friday night.
Oh, I see what you're doing. Yeah.
About video games. Or, you know, a show once a month. You could go on talk comedy and video games. It's a plug.
Plug. He got us. He snuck that one in there. You bloody devil dog.
Don't forget, our next show is the 25th of November. Or, as you may know it in the future, the 25th of November.
That's right. I mean, we do have another show. 25th of November. Only confirmed guest we have so far is a doozy. We got Lucy O'Brien from IGN Australia,
the editor.
Which is a high profile position.
And we have reached out to someone else. We can't tell you who it is.
No, we can't.
But we want them to get back to our emails.
And there's also a slim chance. Oh, sorry, a slight unconfirmed chance we may have our good friend Lee Namo from the Axis of Awesome drop by. Now, the reason I bring him up is we haven't talked to on this show about Insert Coin at all, because they hadn't launched last show.
What even is that, Ben?
Well, Insert Coin is a great new website full of comedy just for gamers. It's
comedy.
It's a lot of our friends that are sort of a part of it. It's the brainchild of Jordan Raskopoulos and Lee Namo from Acts of Awesome. They got funding from Screen Australia to make all this comedy, and they've come to us. They've come knocking on our door, and they've gone, listen, guys, listen, Big Head Mode, we just can't do it without you, all right? And we've gone, I guess we could. The analogy I've been giving people, right, is that they're like the agents of... they're the Shield from Marvel, and we like the Avengers. You know, they're this overwhelming force and of resources and, you know, surveillance. But we're kind of like with
Arrow,
the team they call in for the.
We got Arrow Girl, Captain America.
Arrow Girl.
Yeah, yeah. You got
Hulk,
one right.
The Hulk, Silver Surfer.
Yeah,
the Green Lantern.
Okay, we're going. Who else? Who else?
Wolverine.
There's one more.
Bruce Banner.
Oh, Thor is in it.
Oh, hey.
And she's just having a good time.
I think that's the most real comic book characters Carlo's ever named.
Iron Man?
Yeah, that's one. That's
sweet.
So basically, it's this great website where there's going to be content from people.
Spider-Boy.
Based in Sydney and Australia and beyond. They've got two great sketches up so far. There's one about Gwent. There's one including Mario and Luigi. And we're doing stuff for them.
And they've also
got the
Water Temple sketch up as well.
They put some of your old sketches up.
I did a couple of years ago.
They're all about just basically doing, you know, funding their own stuff and also propping up and supporting any local content creators about games. Basically, they want to be the new, or not the new, but like a kind of Australian version of a Rooster Teeth or a Penny Arcade.
Yeah.
Or, you know, because there isn't a huge amount of that. In Australia.
Yeah,
so it's really,
really
great.
Really exciting.
Check out their website, insert-coin.com.
You look excited.
I am.
And because we're now part of the Insert Coin Network, they're hosting this old podcast up there as well. That is not their theme song. But I mean, look, before we sort of go to some music and get into the news and whatnot, and we're going to talk later. So I know Tom has he's got his little list there.
I got so many games
Tom
from PAX.
Tom wants
so
the whole
excited.
10 minutes just to talk about all the games he's played.
I'd listen to it.
I've said, Tom, I want your top five.
I don't
because there were 60 indie games, which is tremendous.
Did you
and
play
could,
all 60?
I could easily spend a minute on each of them.
Yeah,
And just take up the whole hour. In fact, can I have my own podcast?
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You can launch it all yourself.
That doesn't sound so much fun.
But look, outside of the games and sort of the attractions, I guess, was there anything
outside of the games? Outside of the games? Games are the thing!
But I mean,
let's talk,
what was your best PAX moment? Because PAX, to me, is more than just, you know, EB Expo is defined to me by what tangible things you play. PAX is about, like, the atmosphere and the community vibe. And everyone I spoke to had a great, different, defining moment. What was your
hands
best one?
Down the funniest thing that happened? And you know, I'm sorry for a bit more self promotion for you guys, but during the Truly Awful Games panel that you guys played some Truly Awful Games. One of them was Pimp My Ride, which was absolutely terrible. Bardia was playing and couldn't quite figure out how to activate this mini game, and this 15-year-old kid comes up.
He was 15. Yeah,
comes up on stage.
Luke
has a couple of tries, fails, and then finally gets it. And the whole auditorium just went nuts. Yeah. I was jumping out of my seat.
And it was this 15-year-old kid who said he'd played the game when he was 7. And everyone called him up, and it was great because you had to go to the specific spot in the street to activate the QuickTime event. But every time he failed, he had to drive around the block. Mm. So as he's driving around the block, everyone in the audience is going, "Luke, Luke, Luke, Luke." And there was this tremendous build-up, and then when it wouldn't work, everyone would just be like, "Oh!" The audience would split in two. Half the people were like, "You're rubbish, Luke." And the rest of the half were like, "Let him try it again. believe in you."
When he got to the fourth time, I even said, "Look, Luke, this will be the last chance. If you can't get it, don't worry, mate. You tried your hardest." And I just honestly did not think it would happen.
And then it did. And
it was pure euphoria.
He got standing ovation. We all jumped up and like grabbed him up and held him up. It was great. And he was rapt. He had a great time.
Did anybody get any photos of that moment?
Yeah, there's a bunch of photos around there.
Of Luke?
Yeah, there's heaps of all of us grabbing him and,
great.
You know.
Great.
And Luke's even spoken to us on the Facebook page and Twitter, which is great.
Shout out to Luke if you're listening to the podcast.
I told him to listen. He bloody better be. Shout out, Luke. Once again, congratulations. I hope we did get to give him. I wanted to give him a copy of Sonic Unleashed as a little reward.
What a wild present!
Is that a reward or a punishment?
Well, it's a reward for me. I don't have to own it anymore. Look, let's go to some music, hey, and then we'll come back. This is Underground from Assassin's Creed Syndicate. By Austin Wintry and, would you believe, Tripod. Take a look around. That was Underground by Austin Wintry and performed by Tripod.
Beautiful
Australian
song.
Comedy band, Tripod.
Yeah.
Who did a lot of music for Assassin's Creed Syndicate.
Yeah, beautiful
enough.
Track, huh?
Yeah.
So, are we talking games of PAX, no?
No, we're talking about something that happened just today. Breaking news. That none of us saw coming, but you know what? It makes sense. There's going to be a Witcher film coming in 2017. Yeah. Now, I'm very excited. I think a Witcher film would be great. There has been a Witcher film before, Viedsman or Hexa.
Viedsman.
Yeah, that's the one. come on,
whatever
guy.
You said.
You got to be on the ball to fix up any of my Polish pronunciation. But so it is based, and this isn't based on the games, it is purely based on the novel series.
It's based specifically on Last Wish and something, what's the elder one? Blood of Elves?
Blood of Elves, yeah, which is kind of like the start of the series, and a lot of, they're all the stories that set up the characters, basically. And they've said they want it to be a series, and this first film is going to come out in 2017. It's being made by, now here are the things that potentially... It's the only real details we have. It's being made by the production company, the Sean Daniel Company, who are the producers of the Mummy series. Now, that could be good or that could be bad.
The film The Mummy?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great film.
It's a good film.
The first one was.
Second
the other one
was good too.
But how much... But I mean...
Come on, buddy.
Those little pygmies? Come on. Oh, was that the third one with the pygmies?
See? They're not even that memorable.
The Scorpion King, which was terrible.
Yeah.
More interestingly, anyway, all right. And Carlo, this is where, because I'm preempting a little bit what your criticisms might be.
Mm-hmm.
But they have a Polish director.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
The director, and you just be on standby for pronunciation, Tomasz Baginski. It's highlighted.
Tomasz Baginski, yeah.
There we go.
I need to back myself more with
Tomasz. The pronunciation. Tomasz. He earned the Oscar nomination for the 2002 film The Cathedral, and it's being written by Thania St. John, who wrote Grimm, Chicago Fire, and the original Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Mm.
So it's got a lot of interesting names, and at this stage there are no actors attached to it. But hey, I mean, I think it looks pretty good.
My biggest concerns, there are two.
Okay.
First off,
it's not in Polish.
No Gwent.
The first one is that it's probably not going to be in Polish, which I think anyway. It's a whole thing. This is a real opportunity. Like, there are no AAA Polish films. Like,
but that's not what they're inspired by the characters within. I don't think it being Polish defines the characters.
Yeah, but it defines the world in a lot of ways. And I think when you're taking stuff from source material, like the fidelity of that material is compromised somewhat when you change the language of it. No one's gonna be like, "Hey, let's make
having read all the books in English." I don't agree.
But it's like, let's make Amelie in English.
That's different.
How's it different?
Because one's a book and one's a film. Books are trans. I mean, how many books have been made from different nationality authors?
Yeah.
None of us can think of any right now.
Heaps is the answer to that.
Yeah, but it's different when you're changing text. But the difference there is that was a
book
and then a film set in, you know, the film adaptation could have been Western before it was
what?
Well, they made a book which was is in Danish.
Yeah, and then they made
a film in Danish,
yeah,
and then they translated it into English and everyone was like, "Well, This Danish film is way better than the English one."
Yeah, but that's that people were annoyed about them bothering. Like, there's no point in remaking a film that's already been made within a year of it being made in another language.
But, it's part of a book.
Because bear in mind, most of the people who read the book outside of Poland haven't read the Polish book. They've read the English book.
Yeah, but also, like,
so if they suddenly saw it in Polish, they'd be like, "Well, this isn't like what I read."
But a lot of the sort of, like, a lot of the language and a lot of the cultural constructions are based on Polish.
I still maintain
the humor
this is the most niche complaint to take, like, to be excited by a movie based on this character that a lot of people love.
Yeah.
It's so niche to be like, well, we should all be in Polish.
I just think it's a shame because I feel like people are missing out on the reason these books are so popular is because they were extraordinarily popular in Poland. You know, like, it's like saying, "Hey, imagine if, like, a German company, before they made The Lord of the Rings, was like, 'Hey, The Lord of the Rings books are great. We're going to make them in German. And everybody's going to watch these films in German. And we got to watch Lord of the Rings in German.'" You know, like, it's so entrenched in the language itself. Like, no one would...
This is why you don't ask a linguist. Western films.
But my second point... Yeah. Is that I feel like they've gone, "Huh, these books are a little bit kind of dark and gothic-y. So we'll get a writer who's mainly worked in this sort of gothic romance style literature, I would suppose you would say, like teen gothic elements. And I'm worried of what that will create in terms of a film. Like, I don't mean to belittle the writer in any way. Like, I mean, those are all great. Particularly Buffy, great series, but I feel like they're focused too much on, like, this is a grim, brooding character, but Geralt also has a lot of personality and a lot of subtlety to them that if you're going to focus on that sort of gothic element, you're going to miss, in a way.
I mean, look, there's so many ways you can look at it, because on one hand, I would say having a Polish director would be the best thing they can do at keeping that cultural significance intact. You know, they haven't just gone, you know, let's get bloody
Steven Spielberg.
Exactly. Like, that, you know, that to me says this is a clear thing. And I'm guessing the author, whose name escapes me at the moment, who has been pretty, like, cagey about who he licensed.
Andrzej Sapkowski.
Yeah.
Sapkowski.
Yeah. Sorry. So I'm guessing that is a very conscious thing. Also, the director, one of the things he's also worked on was he directed all of the cinematics for The Witcher games, the big, like, trailer cinematics. So he's got experience with the Witcher world.
For the Polish version.
Well, for all of it. I mean, they all had the cinematics.
Yeah, but they're all, you know, they started in Polish and then they were translated.
Look at them as one series. It's the same game. It's different language, like, different acting, but it's the same game.
No one goes, "Hey, look, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, the same film," do they?
But that analogy doesn't work. That's a terrible analogy.
How not?
Because this is the one game that had the same cinematic cutscene. It's not like you and I have played different games. Yeah. We played the same game with different acting tracks.
All right,
and mine's
then.
Better because your actors suck. All right?
Whoa.
There we go.
Hey, whoa.
I'm sorry, you don't have Charles Dance. You don't have Charles Dance. And you never will. You'll never have Charles Dance.
I'm playing through it in English this next time, Ben, and I'm excited.
Well, don't be, because you won't be disappointed, because you're a bottomless pit of Polish bias. Look, I think that director's quite promising, and the author. Another way to look at it is Witcher, which has copped a lot of, shall we say, criticism for the first game in their portrayal of women. I'd say it's got a female screenwriter, which is great for a huge blockbuster film.
Mm.
But the next thing is, and obviously if you want this to be in Polish, this is going to be a difficult conversation to have, but casting. Who would we want to cast in this?
I just don't know any Polish actors. Sean Connery. Very well.
Okay, well then, you know what? Let's not cast as Polish. Let's just run a whim. I mean, look, there's every chance it could be cast Polish, and there's every chance it could be done in Polish.
Mm.
I just think with an American production company, it's probably not likely.
I think Yvonne Strahovski would make a really good Triss. She played...
Now, are you just going to name anyone you know with a Polish surname?
No, she looks like Triss. Yvonne Strahovski. Like, yeah, think about her, right. What she looks like. The voice actress for Miranda
in
Mass Effect 2.
Yeah.
Mass
she's in Chuck. Yeah. She's Australian as well, right?
She's Australian, but she speaks fluent Polish.
Jesus important. Christ.
Important.
So, you know,
all right, well,
good
we've,
option.
We've got a few suggestions on Twitter. Nick Tatership says the guy who plays Louis Litt in the TV show Suits could probably pass for Lambert. Hmm. Could probably pass. There's a lot of qualifiers there, Nick.
It's a distant character too, Lambert.
Yeah. Like. And Nate says on Twitter that obviously the role of Yennefer already belongs to Eve Beauregard.
Yeah.
Sure, they've got to give her a call. At the very least, she could help them with the costume.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It'd take her a while to learn Polish, though, is the only trick.
You know, Jesus Christ. You know who I really want to play? Geralt. Because I saw a fan picture of him as Geralt, and ever since then, I just can't see anyone else. Mads Mikkelsen.
I don't know Mads.
You should know. You should know him.
What is Mads?
He plays Hannibal. Series Hannibal. And he was in the excellent Viking film Valhalla Rising. Which is one of the best Viking films.
Is he Icelandic actor or something like that?
Does he speak Polish?
I don't know, Carlo. I don't. He might be.
Mikkelsen.
He played the bad guy in Casino Royale.
Yes.
Oh, that chap.
It's a British film.
Yeah.
British American. Yeah. No, it wasn't Polish, but it was good nonetheless.
Yeah, he was good.
He is good. Really good. He is pretty good. I think he might even be. I'm not going to guess.
I reckon he could be Icelandic with Mikkelsen or sort of Norwegian, maybe.
I mean, he may well be. Or Danish. Danish actor. Yeah. There we go.
Oh, good old Google.
But look, he'd be great. He'd be great. And other than that, Christian Bale as Zoltan the dwarf. No, the other good casting suggestion I saw on Twitter as Emperor Emir, Jeremy Irons. That's pretty good.
Who's Jeremy Irons?
Jeremy Irons can
Jeremy
sort of
Irons.
Do anything, though.
He could, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, I don't know who that is.
I'll look him up.
God, this is... I really had high hopes for this segment.
Can we talk about games now?
Yeah, look, let's go to some music, come back, we'll talk about PAX Games.
Yes.
This is another song for from Syndicate, Give Me the Cure.
God, give me a cure that will stick.
Well, we're back, and Tom, you have a list of 60 indie games from PAX Oz. I have suggested that we talk about the 5 games that jumped out at you the most.
Yeah.
And then obviously we'll talk around it. We'll talk around it a bit. But first of all, like a number of indies at PAX is incredible. Right?
Oh my God, thank you very much, PAX, for a huge indie pavilion.
It was the biggest exhibiting space in the festival other than the board games area.
I mean, it would have to have been the biggest selection or the biggest just gathering of indie games in Australia ever, right?
Sure.
I can't imagine when more than 60 indie games would have all been in that proximity anyway.
Yeah,
yeah, no, that's, yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
it's fit in a candy store.
Someone tell us otherwise, but yeah.
Right, thanks, PAX. All right, so let's get straight into it.
All right. Number one.
Not doing best five, but these are my top
I'm
five.
Just counting.
But,
yeah. Just counting so the audience at home can count along with me.
All right, whatever. Indies, beloved of indies, puzzle games.
Mm-hmm.
My best puzzle game, I thought, was Death Squared.
I saw that.
It was Death Squared?
Yes.
It was where there were the four cubes, am I right?
Yeah, yeah. So it's a co-op couch game. where you had like little lasers pointing at you, and you had to manipulate your characters while around others, and you're all kind of working together and looking out for each other. It was really so. It's two player and four player, and it was one of the most innovative puzzle games I'd seen.
Yeah, it looked great.
So really cool. That's coming soon to consoles.
To consoles.
Yeah.
All consoles, Thomas.
I don't know. Soon. 1 second. I actually have it all written down here, but let's not bore you. Let's move straight on. The funniest game. The only game. A lot of games bored. Smiles to my face. Tears to my eyes.
And a dream to your heart.
Yes, but only one made me laugh out loud. And that was Knuckle Sandwich.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I saw about that. Yeah.
So this is, I mean, if you're someone in your 20s and you've been jobless,
okay,
you will find this game hilarious because it just very, very accurately...
Very specific audience.
But there are a few of us out there. Let's be honest.
I hear that.
Yeah. Oh,
boom. High five in the studio there.
So the demo is available online, Knuckle Sandwich. Check it out. Best story. Best story. What do you guys reckon?
From the indie games I tried?
You guys,
I really liked Objects in Space. In terms of you were creating the story as you played.
Yeah. Well, you're actually wrong because it was sometimes always monsters.
Well, Carly gets points for trying though, surely.
No. Okay.
Jeez, he's tough, Carly.
But this is the sequel to Always Sometimes Monsters, which came out last year or the beginning of this year, but really great storytelling integrated into the game. You know, instead of them asking at the beginning of the game what gender you are and you're sort of picking male or female, you're asked to go and find your character, and depending on whether you go into the male toilets or the female toilets, that will be the gender. So it's just really well integrated story that has a bajillion different permutations.
Cool.
And a lot of fun. And it's the opposite to the first game in the series, where you were trekking across from the East Coast to the West Coast of the US, trying to write this book. Mm-hmm. So you've now written it, and you've made a whole lot of money, and this is your descent. You're spending all of your money slowly and eventually ending up at the point where you need to write another book, so you go back and play the first game, which I thought was a really cool idea.
It is really cool.
Yeah, so that's Sometimes Always Monsters, which will be available early next year.
Awesome.
Bang. Yes. Now, just quickly, the best game that I wouldn't play.
Best game that you wouldn't play?
It's a game that you really enjoyed, but you wouldn't play it again?
I'm going to guess it's a platformer.
Close.
Okay.
But... No,
or a hack and slash kind of game.
But you're in the right idea because
you hate platformers.
I do hate platformers. I really hate them.
Is it something?
It's a genre that I don't like playing.
Action-y kind of.
No.
Okay. That's my guesses.
Hat games.
Right, moving right along. Best game I wouldn't play was Phantasmal.
Okay. I was just reading it. That would be Phantasmal. City of Darkness.
I don't think so.
I don't think so, Ben.
Yeah, no, that's...
Is it?
Yeah.
Is that the proper title?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I should have written that down.
By iMobi in a studio based in New Zealand.
Yeah, possibly. Yes, that sounds about right.
So this... really, really lovely art.
Is scary art. Scary art.
It's like a Lovecraftian thing.
Yeah. Well, I'd seen it before, but this was the first time I got to play it in virtual reality, and it's this procedurally generated horror thing that just made me crap my pants, and I'm not ever interested in playing it, but it was really good, so I thought I should...
Cool.
So that's why you don't want to play it, because it's good, because it's convincingly scary.
Yes. So thank you very much, but no thanks.
It does look... I was just reading about that before, and that's the one that's set in a walled-off city... In Vietnam, I think.
No.
Kowloon? Oh, no, wait.
Dude, I don't think we're talking about this.
No,
same,
look, at PAX, Oculus Rift game, procedurally generated first-person survival horror set in now-demolished Kowloon walled city in Hong Kong.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, that so looks you great. And I, we got different perspectives on this game.
Well, I have the facts about it, but you played it. Yeah, so it was. Well, so what's the, you know, I love a good horror game. What's
number five?
Okay. I was going to ask, what's the scary thing in the Like, what's scary about it?
The art, but you're in this dark space and you've got these weird creatures walking around and you're trying to sneak past them and, you know, you've got a little pistol, but if you use it, then it just attracts more and it just ends up crazy scary. I don't even want to think about it. Can we move on, please?
Yeah.
Sure. Right,
can I ask a quick question in between 4 and 5? Did I see right that there was a game called Merchants and Knights or something like that?
Merchants and Mercenaries?
Merchants and Mercenaries. Is that an indie title?
Mm-hmm.
So I know a lot of people who, I think, play that game.
Yes, I think it's out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I never, like a lot of people have recommended that game to me, and I didn't realize it was an indie title.
Hmm.
Merchants and Mercenaries.
Yeah. What's the gist of, we can detour. What's the gist of Merchants and Mercenaries?
It's kind of like Civilization Light.
Okay.
You're sort of expanding your territory and building up resources.
Yeah.
And there are a whole bunch of different ways to win, you know, either through overrunning your opponent or just building up your castle.
A friend of mine, he and his dad are both addicted to this game.
Mm. Awesome.
And I did not realize it
not
was...
Not the addiction part, but I mean...
I didn't realize it was an Australian indie game that they were so... passionate about playing.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah,
cool. There you go. I've got two more. Best RTS.
Ooh.
This was really interesting. I wasn't expecting to see RTSs in the indie section. Probably my second favorite game.
Okay.
Siegecraft.
Oh yeah.
Ooh. You guys heard about this?
It's got two popular words in video game titles.
Yeah, yeah. So just mash them together and hopefully something good comes out.
Yeah.
And in this case it does. So Siegecraft, you're building your forts in real time against opponents. So that can either be somebody else on these games are on mobile devices.
Mm-hmm.
So very quick games with small tech trees and a lot of fun. So I thought that was really awesome.
Nice.
But the biggest genre, the most well-represented, was easily couch games.
Like four-player couch co-op, couch multiplayer games?
Yeah.
Lounge games?
Like our friends over at Dungeon League, for example.
Mm, yeah.
Who are there and exhibiting and will soon be on Xbox and PlayStation.
Pop up.
Bang, bang.
That's some champagne.
We've spoken enough about Dungeon League. I want
to... We're going to have to get Chris to actually come on the show at one point too and talk about it.
He hasn't been on the show yet.
He hasn't been on the show.
That's a travesty.
It is.
I thought, though, the best couch game for my money was Crawl.
Oh, that's a good game. And I've actually played that one. Hey. That was there last year as well,
yes.
I think. Jeez, that's a fun game. So the gist of it, Carlo, if you haven't played it, is that what? It's 4 versus 1. Is that correct, Tom?
3 versus 1.
3 versus 1.
Oh, one person controls the dungeon and the other people are party going through it?
It's three people versus the one, isn't it?
Yeah, so there's one person that's
one
the
hero. Yeah.
And the other three are monsters or even traps. And they're trying to kill the hero. And if they do, then they become the hero.
And like the further you get through the dungeon, the basically the tougher monsters and enemies that the other players get to be, till you get to the very end room where it's a huge boss with like, you know, where all three players are different parts of the boss.
Cool.
Like one might be like the right tentacle arm and one might be like the head that shoots fireballs.
Wow. Mm.
It's really cool.
And it's completely procedurally generated map. And as Ben almost mentioned, the monsters have an evolution tree. As well, so there are some really cool RPG aspects, It's in early access now. So check it out.
So
cool.
Tom, and it has playable Gabe Newell as one of the bosses.
Now, Tom, you do have really comprehensive notes on all of your games, all the games that you got to share. So you have a PAX. There's heaps of stuff there. Can people maybe expect you might write it up for the website?
They can expect that. They might not get it.
Well, there we go. That's our top five.
Tom,
I think it was
what
six,
a legend.
Actually.
He played almost every
60
indie
games.
That was your entire weekend.
That was
wow.
What a weekend!
The whole list is online. We can post the whole list. And I just if any of them sounded cool, just check them out. A lot of them are out there, and you can play them now.
It's an exciting time for Australian indie games.
And look, speaking of exciting times, after this we're going to be reviewing Assassin's Creed Syndicate. This is Family by Austin Wintory. All right, guys, it's time to talk about a game that I know you both are very fond of.
What?
And you love quite a bit.
Oh, we're talking more about Crawl.
No. We're talking about Assassin's Creed.
Yeah!
Tom, I remember back in, I think it was 2007, the first Assassin's Creed had just come out. I was totally...
You were very keen.
Just in love with this game. And I remember you coming around to look at it.
Right.
To watch me play it. And I remember...
As we did back
then. Minute was you going, okay, oh, yeah, that looks good. And I reckon after that minute had worn off, you were already unimpressed.
Right.
You were already like, this isn't the kind of game for me. And you know what? It's been through a lot of changes, some more obvious than others.
Some more beneficial, perhaps.
But I was just overwhelmed with how, no matter how far the series has come, there's just certain sticking points that are the same, that just the game hasn't evolved. And I think overall my impression of this game is it's not a bad game. It's actually, objectively,
okay,
quite a good game.
There we go.
The problem is it's not a new game. And I think that's the that's the sticking point for the Assassin's Creed series. You know, like Assassin's Creed 2, a lot of people loved and it bought a lot of favor for the series because they did take quite a sizable jump from Assassin's Creed 1. And then this is just the same game with a few extra frills, a few little minor gameplay tweaks.
Mate, every Assassin's Creed game that I've ever seen or ever played is just a bunch of climbing and a bunch of falling and a bunch of running.
But that's fun. I mean, I want an action game where I can run around and feel like this capable, athletic assassin who's in a little free roam.
But there's no challenge
period.
To it. There's no challenge to it. It's like, if there was a challenge and, like, I have to actually... Like, Tomb Raider has a great climbing dynamic. Because you have to, like... If I'm going to climb it, I have to hit B at a certain time and then hit X at a certain time.
Well, I mean, to be fair, they have evolved the climbing and stuff. Now you have a multiple... Look, anyway, that's not what I'm talking about. Let's not immediately criticize the stuff that I do think the series does well. The problem is that they haven't really taken a step beyond... stealth is just a matter of, like, avoiding where the enemies are looking. There's no real challenge or utensils. I mean, especially after a game like Metal Gear Solid 5 has just come out, which has a sandbox of stealth options.
A whole sandbox?
And a literal box, and a cardboard box of stealth options. You know, Assassin's Creed is still just limited to the whole, like, try and avoid them seeing you, and if they do see you, go up and kill them, and then hope no one else saw you kill them,
and
then
kind of
hide
did,
again.
Kill everybody,
yeah.
Wait for the alarm to get shut off.
Yeah.
Repeat.
Yeah, there's no variety to the... Because, I mean, Assassin's Creed 2 brought in, you know, hiding in crowds and sort of ambient hiding stuff. And they made as much fun about avoiding enemies as it was to fight them, you know. Mm. So the fun was in, I've got all these enemies chasing me. I've got to run and map out escape routes and stuff like
that.
And, like, ever since then, Unity made combat too hard. So you got your ass kicked and you wanted to run away, but you felt like you were hiding. And then Syndicate has kind of gone more the other way again, where fighting is easier. It's fun, but there's kind of, you never feel like there's any need to run away and escape. So all the time they're put into building these great escape mechanics. I mean, there's this entire component of the game that is riding carriages. You can ride your stagecoach, climb on top of your stagecoach, jump across to an enemy stagecoach and hijack it and take him out. And it's all mostly pointless because at any point you can stop your stagecoach, all the other enemies stop theirs, and then just get out and have a street brawl. And it just takes away all the urgency of what could be really cool, like sort of fast-paced chase scenes through the streets of London. Instead, it's just kind of like, well, this is just annoying. I'm just going to stop and then shank everyone and then kind of go back and have quite a leisurely, like, sort of horse race. And, like, Black Flag really nailed the ship combat. Like, ship combat is the most intuitive thing that they've added to any of the games since Assassin's Creed 2.
And they should have just gone, you know what, let's just make a pirate game. Because it would just go from extraordinarily intuitive naval combat and a really fun dynamic of building up your ship, then back to sneaking around in jungle foliage on an island.
And you know what? I thought for sure they were going to do that. I remember at the time there were all of these surveys they were doing with their fan base that was saying, hey, would you play a non-Assassin's Creed pirate game? If we made a big... there was even talk about like a big sort of MMO kind of, or like a multiplayer pirating experience,
yeah,
which would have been great.
You know that sounds actually a lot like Corsair Kings, which was an indie game. At PAX.
There we go.
Corsair Kings. If you want to build your own ship and go and pillage some archipelagos,
yeah, that's
you
cool.
Want to check that out?
That's cool.
Because see, pirate games are great fun. You know, and if you build them well, they can be really entertaining.
Yeah.
But look, as far as this game goes and its depiction of Victorian London, you know, it's a good depiction. The atmosphere is always something that they at least nail when walking through a city.
They've got a playable female character in Assassin's Creed game.
Not just playable, but she's probably the stronger of the two. In fact, a lot of people are saying out there that I think it's their favourite assassin pairing since Ezio, and it's probably their most interesting assassin protagonist, because you have these twins, Jacob and Evie, who are very different personality-wise. Jacob likes to solve problems by just going in and punching up and fighting and not worrying about the repercussions. Evie's tactical and strategic, and it works into the narrative quite well. Basically, they're cleaning up London and trying to dismantle this huge Templar regime. Surprise, surprise, that's kind of usually what the games are about. But
Templars? Oh, bloody hell. Oh, there's some assassins around.
But the thing that's really cool is that Jacob will go in and do his rash, like, I don't really care about the repercussions, you know. Like, oh, this Templar's corrupt and he runs this hospital, but they're doing dodgy stuff and experiments. We'll just go in there and kill him. Then you'll do the follow-up mission as Evie, where she goes back to the hospital and she finds out that, you know, that guy was evil, but he also still was the main supplier of, like, a lot of cheap medicine for a lot of people, and heaps of people are sick. And it kind of... It's the first game to really go into the wider, like, you know, killing someone doesn't just solve societal problems. Yeah. Like, it kind of... It explores that and actually says how, you know what, these power struggles, it is... Like, that's the shades of grey with Templars, that, yeah, they have sort of, you know, slightly dodgy ways, like, methods.
Yeah.
But they are still these huge... figures of power, and if you just kill all the, you know, figures of power, there's going to be this massive vacuum.
Well, that was one of the things that always made me that got me out of the mode of Black Flag, was like, you kill a bunch of governors, and why aren't these islands descending into absolute anarchy?
Exactly. You know?
Like, who is still controlling this military presence here?
Yeah, and that's like, it's the first game to actually address that, and so I don't know if that's a plus, or if it's more just like a question mark as to why it hasn't been addressed till now. Mm. But it was a nice touch.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, in terms of that regard, like, the story aspect of it, you know, I found myself a lot more attached to the characters. And compared to Unity, which was a mess and the characters were flat, all that stuff is just tighter. So the kind of the many side missions, like, you know, rescuing children and from little sort of factories and, you know, hunting Templars and all that stuff's a lot more enjoyable. And... Everything free roam, it lets you choose which character you want to play as. So I think they were saying that it's like 30% of the game is playable as Evie and the rest is Jacob, but I played a vast, vast majority as Evie. And you know what? It made me realize. So, like, I've enjoyed the game, but there are three glaring things that they just need to fix and resolve if they want this series to go anywhere. They're so glaring. First of all,
I'm blinded.
Yeah,
the whole modern component that they've just kind of shoved it off into a dark corner. They don't know what they're doing with it anymore. There is no modern day protagonist. It's just a weird, confusing cutscene with extra narrative that makes no sense to anyone who hasn't been playing them, and it's boring to anyone who has. They need to shit or get off the pot, basically, about do they want to keep that modern component? If they do, they need to commit and actually have a story. And if they don't, then just get rid of it and just give us historical games. That's fine. Either way, just commit. The other thing they need to do is they need to drastically change player freedom. Like, if they want to give you this big open box game, they need to actually let people truly choose how they want to play. You know, give people more to do than just running and killing. Give people actual historically contextual, like, thing, like RPG things. Give them more ways to interact with NPCs or characters, or build up a homestead or build up their own lives. You know, dig deeper into that historical, because on the surface they are just all the same running and stabbing games.
I think what they could do the most with the Assassin's Creed games, and this is, I think that they should stop making them and put some of that money and time and development team into Beyond Good and Evil 2.
That's a good point. That's, well, you kind of touched on what my third thing was going to be, which is just not stop making them all together, stop making them every year.
Yeah.
Give them 3 years. Like, the gap between Assassin's Creed 1 and Assassin's Creed 2 was 3 years, and it made them actually think, how can the next one be a big jump?
Mm.
Like, give them time to play. Like, come on, man. Like, there must be... I mean, these developers have worked so hard, they must have no time at all to sit back and think, what do we want to do? Because they're already thinking, whatever we think of, it has to fit into the next two games that are already planned.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Just Ubisoft, just whoa there. Just
take a breath, mate.
Just stop your carriage, have your street brawl, and then just go off and sit down somewhere, have a nice pint, just relax, and just see what creativity comes back when you've slowed down a bit.
There it is.
Hey? All right, look, got a couple messages, and then we're going to come back and wrap up the show. Well, that brings us to the end of another show. Tom, Carlo, thanks for coming in, guys.
Thanks very much for having us, Ben. I really appreciate it.
Don't worry about it, Tom. Any bloody time you want. As always, you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Big Head Mode 2RRR. Up next is Accidentally Curly's Treat. We're going to play him out with the Assassin's Creed Revelations main theme. Till then, see you guys next week.
Bye-bye.